Hello and welcome to Alchemy 101, the show where we explore the many methods of transformation and aim to mine a few nuggets of gold that can support us in living in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature, even though sometimes that feels counterintuitive, just like the nightingale, a bird that sings out in the dark. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and today's show is brought to you in association with Nasal Guard, the drug-free nasal gel that uses electrostatic technology to block harmful airborne contaminants. It blocks indoor and outdoor allergens, so it's great for travellers as well as people with pet allergies. Now, on today's show, we're taking a dip into the benefits and joys of cold water swimming. Now, I know you've heard me talking a lot about how much I enjoy swimming in the sea near where I live on the east coast of Scotland, but I'm not the only one. Open water swimming, wild swimming, surged in popularity during lockdown here in the UK, and numbers have continued to swell as people discover the benefits of cold water on their mental and physical well-being. Back then, it may have started as a way of exercising when the indoor swimming pools all over the country closed their doors. But soon people, mostly women from what I've seen, but that's just anecdotal, I haven't done a survey, discovered the joys of what's grown into a warm and welcoming community. It's a community that I'm grateful for every day. That's me who vowed as a teenager never to swim off the coast of the UK ever again. Now look at me. I've just swum through my third winter. The phenomenon has inspired a host of online content, TV shows and books offering advice on how to swim safely in nature as well as where the best spots are. Now, one swimmer, a holistic therapist here in Scotland, has just published a book that celebrates the phenomenon through the lens of women who are hooked. Laurie Graham joined me the other day to talk about her book and the many reasons why we all love our cold water swims. Oh, Laurie, lovely to have you with me today, a fellow swimmer. Yoo-hoo!
Yay! Great to be here.
Well, thank you. And not just a fellow swimmer, but a fellow swimmer who's actually written a book about finding solace in the sea, 50 Reasons Why. And really, it's a beautiful book because it brings together 50 stories or, you know, stories from a bunch of, they're all women, aren't they? All women. Mm-hmm. Who have taken up what is these days called wild swimming, cold water swimming, what we used to call when I was a child, just swimming, often off the coast of where we both live in Scotland, but also elsewhere. You've got people from all over the world who've contributed to this book. But the book is lovely and it's written in your voice very much. And it's a lovely record of how cold water swimming has helped so many of us. And there are a number of things that you refer to in the book, and we'll come on to those shortly, like community and like helping ourselves just get into a much closer relationship with nature. But first of all, what really brought you to this and what made you get these stories together and write this book?
Well, the idea behind the book itself came from one of the Mastiff Dukes, the Mahusiff Dukes that we did at Aberdour.
Now, just for anybody who's not Scottish.
Yes.
A Duke is, I think they have the same word in Norwegian and other languages, but it is basically just getting into the water. So a dip.
A dip. So every year, obviously, we do the New Year Duke, which is the Loony Duke. But all the little sort of individual swimming groups came together and created a Mahusiff Duke.
which is a massive duke, gigantic.
And we did it a couple of times. And I think it was the second or third one, I can't remember, but it was the most recent one. I got together with one of the other swimming group leaders, and as part of the event, we were creating little sort of stalls on the day, and one of the stalls included a circle of people telling their story and sharing their story on how they came to Cold War therapy in Duking. And it was a lovely experience. I'd also done a podcast with the guy's name was Cuddy. I'd done a podcast with him. He did an interview with me asking why I got involved with Cold War therapy. And it was something that we had planned on taking forward, and interviewing lots of different people from all over the place, and just getting their stories out there on this podcast. At that point, I wasn't really confident about doing podcasts, so I never really took it any further. But we did take it further with the Mahusa Duke, and we had a nice little group of people all sharing their stories. And when I came away from that, it was really emotional. There was lots of personal information shared, their own personal journey. And I've been part of like women's circles, where we all gather and we share that kind of, we just share. It's a sharing space. And there's something special about doing that. And I have done it globally with other women online in a sort of collective space. And I just decided, do you know what? I need to get this information. I need to get stories from women into a book because it's the best incentive for anybody else that's new to the dipping community. And I also wanted to kind of quash that. There's a bit of a stigma attached, or women specifically feel there's a stigma attached where they have to have the right equipment, where they're maybe too fat or too thin to join a group, or women can be quite cliquey when it comes to groups of women. And I wanted to kind of squash that out, you know, knock it out of the park, because within the swimming groups, there is none of that. There's no competition, there's no comparison. We are all there for the same or similar reasons. We all just want to get in the water and forget about life for a little while. But we all have our own journey on how we actually get there and why we stay doing it. And I wanted to obviously share that with other people and give lots of little hints and tips on what we need, because one of the first questions usually is, what equipment do I need? And you don't really need equipment in general. You just need a pair of boots, a gloves, and a swimsuit, theoretically. Some people use a toe float, others don't. And a toe float is one of these things you just kind of wrap around your waist, and it's a big inflatable, and you can pop bits and pieces inside it as well sometimes. But I wanted everybody who was new to dipping to have that information to hand, a bit like a sort of beginner's guide as well. So it kind of came at it from all different angles, and it was in the one place and easy to access.
Yeah, there is this beautiful community sense that comes about from groups, not just groups, but I've formed friendships doing this that I would never have formed before with people who I would never have met before. And it's been enriching, it's been wonderful. And I don't think it's any coincidence that this really took off during lockdown when we were all so isolated. And it was a great way of maintaining that feeling of community when we weren't really allowed to go anywhere, be in anybody's houses. That was all kept from us. So it was a great way of getting together and still having that community. But it's gone far beyond that. For me, and we'll talk a little bit more about this, and your experiences and other people's experiences in the book, it's a massive part of my well-being regime now. And I'm almost addicted to it, but it's just because you feel so good as a result of it. Now, we talk about in your book the barriers and what people are worried about. And you've mentioned, am I, or how am I going to look in a swimming costume or a wetsuit or whatever? What do I need? Do I need all this fancy gear? No, you don't.
You don't.
You don't. And the other thing that I loved about it is that I came to realize that nobody gives a damn.
No.
Nobody gives a damn what you look like, how long you stay in the water. It's not a competition and it's not a fashion show, right? We say this to everybody. My friends and I who swim say this to everybody who comes along who's new. It isn't a fashion show. You do you.
Yes, you do you.
And don't worry about how long you stay in the water. 3 minutes, 5 minutes, absolutely fine. You'll get the benefits. And this is one of the main points to get across, isn't it, apart from the safety?
Absolutely. The main point, I think, is, yeah, you said it yourself there, it's just getting in the water and experiencing that. And it's a challenge, and it's hard going for the first few times. It's hard going pretty much every time because yeah. The North Sea, it's absolutely freezing up here. So every time we get in the water is a challenge. But it's being able to do that safely, confidently, and to stay comfortable while you're in the water as well. And then obviously the safety that you need when you come back out and you get dressed and heat up quickly, and you know, and then you get to stand and have a chat with complete strangers. It's great.
I know, you do meet some fantastic people, and from all over the world. We've met people from Argentina, from Australia, from, you know, from all parts of the world who come along and swim. I'm near a tidal pool, which is crafted out of the rocks, which means that it's safe at any time of the day, pretty much, apart from if it's a really, really rough high tide, in which case you don't want to go into the water anyway, because that's not safe. But it's so famous now that people come from all over the world to experience it, which is extraordinary to me. And of course, this was something that was which was very common along these coasts in Scotland back in the 50s and 60s. And then they fell into disrepair because people went to Spain on holiday and people went to, you know, all these warmer places and they swam in warmer water. They've been brought back into service and people are loving them. But it's the community. It's that well-being effect of community, but also the physical and yeah, the safety aspects are very important. But when you've got a few aches and pains and you get into that cold water and when you get out, they've gone. Mm-hmm. That's a fabulous thing.
Yeah, amazing. Absolutely.
So in terms of the physical, you talk a little bit about the Wim Hof method in your book and the breathing. So what are the things that we should do to prepare ourselves to go for a cold water swim? A duke.
Usually it's you concentrate, anybody that comes along to our groups, I just ask them to concentrate on their breath work and to stay calm as they're going into the water, and definitely not to just go running in, because that's when you can obviously cause your shock to your system. But no, I concentrate on breathing specifically, and it's just deep breathing as if you were doing a meditation. So it's deep breathing in through your nose and out through your mouth. And I do that as we're walking down towards the water, as we're going in, and then I stop and allow the body to kind of acclimatise a little bit. And then we do some more breathing. And when the other person's ready, we literally just go down slowly into the water. We lower ourselves down into the water on that out breath, and never, ever do it on the in breath, because as you do it on the in breath, you catch your breath. When you're doing it on out breath, your body's far more relaxed, and lower your shoulders. If you bring your shoulders up to your ears, you're automatically going to be tense and ready to prepare for that whole sort of, it's fight or flight, isn't it? But yeah, gradually going in, taking your time, and everybody's different. Nobody does it the same way. And I said earlier, there's some days it takes me longer to get in as well. I don't always go in straight away. Today it took me a little bit longer to get in. It was freezing this morning, but it was beautiful. It was absolutely gorgeous. So the main thing is just your breath work. Concentrate on your breath work.
That is true, but there's more to consider, and we'll go into all of that in a few minutes. First, it's time to take a short break. I'll be back with more from Laurie Graham right after these messages.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 with me, JJ, the practical alchemist, and my special guest today, cold water swimmer and chronicler and therapist Laurie Graham. We talked about breathing before the break, but there are things to be wary of too. So back to the conversation.
Yeah, and don't jump in either. And you know, that can be a shock to the system. If you're jumping in and not breathing, it can really give you a bit of a shock. So you have to be careful with that.
That's right.
Also be careful about, you know, get to know the tides and get to know the safety elements of where you're going to go for a swim. Now, it's not always by the sea. Sometimes it's in a lake or a loch or a river. Be aware of what the conditions are like in that area, right? You have to prepare in that sense.
Yeah, I've said that in the book as well. Whenever you're swimming somewhere new, if you don't know the landscape, you have to check it out prior to your first swim. So the likes of if you're visiting a beach for the first time, we always check it out on a low tide to see what the rocks are like and see what the landscape's like. And we also check it on a high tide to see how far the water's actually going to come up, because you can pretty much swim. If you're aware of what's under your feet, you can pretty much swim on any tide. We normally recommend sort of 2 hours before and after, high and low. But if you know where you are and you know what you're dealing with, you can go pretty much any time, because there's some beaches out there that are absolutely flat as a pancake on any tide. So you can swim whatever tide you want. But yeah, checking the landscape, checking how far the tide comes in, how far the tide goes out. We have a beach, Petticoat Bay, which goes out for miles. So on a low tide, it would be pretty much impossible to actually enjoy your swim, because you'd be walking for about half an hour before you got there. Even Seafield Beach on a low tide can be quite far to walk from the car park. But yeah, just checking out what you're dealing with. Rocks, tidal height. Also, you need to check with the moon to find out what cycle the moon's on, whether it's a full moon or a new moon or in between, because that obviously affects the tides as well. But I put a little bit more information about that in the book as well. So the little snippets, it's not, the book itself is not, it's not a full sort of fully comprehensive do's and don'ts. It's just little bits of information that you need to know for your first few swims. Any more than that and you want to research, then you can do that yourself. But this is just kind of, as I said, it's a very beginner's guide.
Yes. And, you know, it is important, that thing about how far out you have to go when you're swimming, because a friend of mine was, and Seafield is a beach at Kirkcaldy in Fife in Scotland. And a friend of mine was going for a swim in St Andrews at the West Sands. Now, if anybody knows that beach, it's huge, it's long. The famous beach from the film Chariots of Fire, where they all go running along the beach in slow motion. But the tide goes out so far. And she'd headed down there at low tide. And by the time, over the time she got to any water, really, she was getting cold. And then she did end up with a little bit of, you know, sort of the beginning of a bit shivery, but, you know, getting to the point where if you're not careful, you're going to get hypothermia. And so she learnt, and there was somebody with her. So that was all right. But she learnt. And the real thing that people forget is the getting warm afterwards, I think. And for me, I don't wear a wetsuit. And one of the reasons why I don't wear a wetsuit is because it takes so long to get the thing off when you come out of the water. And in that time, if it's a freezing cold wind blowing, you can get very cold. And it takes a lot longer to warm up afterwards. So for me, I'd rather just be in a swimsuit, get into the water, feel the water, and actually enjoy it. I know a lot of people don't believe that you can enjoy it, but you can. Enjoy it, come out, quickly off, get the warm clothes on, get a cup of tea for me into my system to warm up the inner core as well. So that's important as well. So you've got something warm outside and something warm inside. And you mention all these things, but the one thing that you mentioned in your book is something sweet to eat afterwards, that is a bit of cake or a biscuit. It's not something that I always do, but you recommend that.
Yeah, that just gives your sugar levels a little boost as well once you come out, because obviously going into that freezing cold, those freezing cold temperatures, it does impact on your body system. So just a little hit just to get you back up and running. But a hot drink does just the same.
Yeah, definitely. And in fact, it's one of the big recommended ways of helping you warm up afterwards. Yeah. And I mean, I'm not saying that we're all perfect because, you know, at the beginning, I did a couple of times stay in a little bit longer than I should. I know now when to get out and, you know, when my body's beginning to get a bit cold or too cold for comfort. But yeah, in the beginning, there were a couple of times when I was very, very shivery. I got out and so I'm very careful to make sure that that doesn't happen again. So these are some of the do's and don'ts, you know, checking tides, but checking currents in rivers and that sort of thing. Speak to locals.
It was one of the, Greg and Jules did a program on the BBC and they did a little river dip with one of the groups. I can't remember what location it was. And I had never even considered what the current would be like in a river. And they said to swim against the current when you're swimming out for your swim, and then to swim back with the current so that it brought you back quicker rather than take you away. I had never even considered that as something to look out for in river swimming. But then I don't do river swimming myself. It's not that I don't like it. I've just never done it. I've never found a nice sort of river round about here that I can go to. But it is definitely something to look out for. I'd never considered that.
Yes, exactly. And also, if you're swimming in a lake, just make sure that, you know, there aren't any obstacles that are going to get in your way, you know, things that might trap you. Just make sure that it's a clear place to swim.
Yeah. And you've got, obviously, the algae and the snails and things like that as well with rocks and lakes.
Yes, yes. I know a friend of mine gets very annoyed when the lochs near him are covered in algae and you can't go swimming in that. But just to go back to Greg and Jules, that's Greg Hemphill and his wife. Greg Hemphill's a very well-known actor here in Scotland who created a very beloved comedy series called Still Game. And they have moved to actually this part of Scotland and suddenly found themselves swimming. And loved it so much that they managed to get a series done for the BBC. Yeah. So then there's the stories from all these wonderful women swimming. I have to admit that when I was reading some of them, I just got very emotional. It's a very emotional thing. Mm-hmm. And it's just so beautiful to see and hear about so many people finding the sea and the water to be so supportive, but it's about getting back to nature, isn't it?
Absolutely. Getting back to nature and grounding yourself, it allows you, it just gives your brain a chance to switch off and shut down from everything that's happening outside that water. When you're in the water, the only thing you can concentrate on is the cold. and staying safe, and obviously your friends round about you, because we all keep an eye on each other when we're in the water, and everybody's responsible for themselves, but we all look out for each other and we have a chat. Most of us just bob about on our float, resting our arms on our float. Some of us do have a little swim. They'll go off and kind of have a little swim backwards and forwards, but it's being able to shut down the brain, to give it a chance to rest from everything that's going on outside that beach.
Yes, and what I like to do is I do tend to swim around a bit, depending on where you are. It depends on where you are and you know, what the conditions are. But I do like to swim. But what I like to do is to just really allow myself to merge almost with the water. Mm-hmm. And tune into the natural world around me. So listen to the bird calls. I won't say bird song, because on the coast there aren't that many songbirds. But the sound of the birds, and at a certain time of year, the seals will sing to us, because they'll have hauled out nearby, maybe where I swim most frequently. And so it's just that knowing that you are part of nature. Mm-hmm. And allowing nature to just literally hold you.
Yeah. It's a cuddle.
So important. It is a cuddle. It's a cold cuddle, but it's a cuddle.
it's comforting.
Yeah, it's a hug. And how beautiful it is that all these women have contributed and talked about their experiences. And, you know, whether it be psychological, physical, it's helped them in so many ways. Just give us a couple of instances from the book.
We've got a few ladies in there who have suffered quite bad with the menopause. The menopause is obviously, we have hot flushes, we have mood swings, we have lots of different symptoms. And for all women, it's different. But there's a few women in there who have experienced reduction in their mood swings, reduction in their hot flushes. It's given them a chance to kind of get away from the stress and everything that's going on and craziness in their own home or work or whatever that is happening. And that gives your brain a chance to just rest. So we have menopause, there's clearly evidence that it's helped them. We have a couple of ladies who suffer quite bad with their mental health. And again, it's given them a chance to switch off and rest that brain, the brain activity, the overthinking. It calms them down from all that. I'm trying to think, there's another lady who started because her friend had suggested it. Her friend passed away with cancer. And one of the last messages she actually sent her was that she was going to do this for her. And she's just continued to do it since then. So there's lots of, there's so many different reasons. Like you said, it's both physical and mental. I just love it. I have to say to somebody, if anybody's wanting to try it for the first time, I just say, just try it. Just do it once, because you're going to hate it the first time. You're going to hate it but love it at the same time. But do it a second time just to make sure, because when you do it that second time, all those inhibitions are out of the equation, but you know what to expect. And that's when your body can relax into it further. And then you'll know for sure it's going to be something that you're going to keep doing, because you will. Most people do keep going.
They do, don't they? And one of the changes that I felt in myself, which I didn't expect at all, was that I started to feel a greater general resilience in terms of my mental attitude. And I think it's the overcoming that it's going to be freezing, but I'm still going to do it every time you go into the water. It's that, okay, I really don't want to do this today because it's cold and the water's going to be cold, but okay, I'm going to do it. And you steel yourself to get in there and you do the breathing and you get in there and you love it. And I think doing that on a regular basis, so it's like moving through the resistance to the cold, something that's uncomfortable initially to you, really helps build that resilience generally in a person. Have you experienced that?
It's a sense of achievement. The resilience, obviously, I appreciate what you're saying with regards to that, but I feel it's more a sense of achievement for me. It's like you're saying, you're pushing through that barrier, the fear, terror barrier, and you're doing it anyway. And then when you come out and you're dressed and you just sit there with your cup of tea and you're like, oh, that was good. I really enjoyed that today, or I really needed that today. And most of the time, the phrase is, I really needed that today.
Yeah.
And I know you haven't been for maybe a few days. I mean, I'm out, at the very least, I'm out 3 times a week. And if I miss one of those days, I know that I need to get in the water the next time because my body needs it, my brain needs it, everything about me needs it, my husband needs it. So, absolutely. It's a great sense of achievement, knowing that you've done it. And then you know that you're going to benefit from that for the next few days until the next step.
Fantastic. I mean, there's no doubt about it. It's a great thing to do mentally, physically, and just for fun.
Mm-hmm.
People don't believe me when I say that, but it is fun when you're swimming. And let's just say, try not to swim on your own, because, you know, you just never know what can happen. And, it's always good to swim with somebody and make sure that you're safe. But it's great fun. And I just think that the community aspect of it is wonderful. You know, we all have a chat. We might not know you. We might never have met you before, but we'll have a chat. We're all in it together. And it's this fabulous sense of community and what that how that can support us as well. Well, well done. Thank you so much for writing the book and bringing people's experiences into the wider public, because I think a lot of people still look at some of us as if we're mad. In fact, every day I'm told, you're mad, pretty much every day. Somebody will walk past us as we're walking along to our swim, and they'll say, you're going in? You're mad.
You're crazy.
Yeah, you're crazy. But but they haven't experienced it, and they don't get how incredibly helpful it is to your mental and physical well-being. So, and how much fun it is. So, Laurie, thank you so much. Where can people, you know, you self-published this book, didn't you?
Yes, this is first ever book that I've ever published. It's available on Amazon at the moment. It's only in paperback, but I do plan on launching the Kindle version, and at some point I will be looking to do the audiobook as well, but at the moment it's just on paperback.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. And now you do have a therapy business. Where can people find out more about you?
The therapy business is Simply Centered. So I do holistic therapies. I'm on Facebook at the moment. And I do lots of different therapies, from reflexology, Reiki, crystal therapy, sort of Indian head massage. And I do a little bit of life coaching. So that kind of ties in with what I've done with the book as well.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much again for getting all these women's stories together and sharing them with the world. Laurie, thank you so much.
Excellent. Thank you very much for having me.
Laurie Graham there. So are you convinced? Just remember to take all the precautions, especially if you're starting. But most of all, enjoy yourself. Swimming in the sea is very grounding. I like to imagine my body just merging with the water and the nature all around me. Only this morning, I saw the most beautiful kestrel hovering over the shoreline as we headed down for our swim. It was just absolutely beautiful. But enough of that. Right now, it's time for another short break. I'll be back with more after these messages.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. You're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio station. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and I hope that my guest Laurie Graham has inspired you to move out of your comfort zone and into the cold water for some cold water therapy or wild swimming. You know, it's that time of year when you might start making plans to give it a go. The weather should be warming up as we move through spring. I say should be, but, you know, we haven't seen much sign of it here in the UK yet. The problem with spring, though, is that for a lot of people, it heralds the beginning of a season of misery. I'm talking about hay fever, of course. I tend to suffer only mildly around May time when the elderflowers in bloom, but a lot of people suffer really badly and for a far longer period. That's where NasalGuard can help you. NasalGuard has been developed to trap pollen, dust and other airborne particles, even virus-sized particles, before they can get into your nasal passage and cause mayhem. It's a water-based gel that's simplicity itself to use. Just smear a tiny amount around your nostrils and notice the difference. NasalGuard was invented to solve the problem of a young girl's cat allergy, but it does so much more, as one user, Janet Costello, told me. I asked her what drew her to NasalGuard in the first place.
I think when I thought about it, it was pretty close to the beginning of the pandemic. And I could not recall if I had been doing some research first, or I had run into it in a retailer and then begun looking at what is this, how does it work, what is their credibility. But it was definitely coincided with the beginning of the pandemic, and it made a lot of sense to me.
Okay. And did it make a lot of difference as well?
So, right, it's hard. It's going to be hard to tell, but yeah. I can tell you that I was not a mask wearer for a lot of reasons, and it is what it is. I did what I had to do to comply with local standards. I also went out to work a retail job with the public, kind of in the middle of it. So I needed to get out of my house. I needed to do something different. And I thought to myself, well, this is a really good time to put this stuff to the test. I did use it any chance I was like legally or mandate wise permitted to not wear a mask. I did not. I did any social activities I could do. I mean, I stayed really well during the pandemic.
Well, there you go. That's something, right?
What can you do with that? I have some interesting other facets. I have two children. One of my sons has Down syndrome, but also happens to have alopecia.
Oh, wow.
And alopecia, he has no eyebrows, no eyelashes, no hair. So your eyebrows and eyelashes,
yeah,
they're a big defense mechanism. So I've been working with him for a really long time. He does not love nasal guard.
Oh, that's a shame.
But I'm working with him. I'm working with him, and we have gotten it on him on a lot of occasions, because I feel like there's a huge benefit, you know, to people who don't have that first line of defense. And a couple of times in very, very dusty, very debris. I'm trying to think. We did a fair that had, we walked on dirt paths.
Yeah.
It was a very dusty event, very, and I put nasal guard right where his eyebrows would be. And I could actually see, I could see dirt and dust all stuck to,
wow, yeah,
that area, which means it wasn't going in his eyes.
Yeah.
So there's a definite application there. I just think for people who are more motivated, he's probably not the best test subject, but I could see how it could be very, very helpful to people with alopecia.
Yeah, I can see that too. And the fact that you could actually see that it was attracting the dust. I reckon that, you know, if you maybe, you know, at the beach or, you know, somewhere,
yep,
like in the summertime, maybe you're in a bit of a desert area where there's a lot of dust swirling around, it would be a good thing to use. Yeah.
I agree. So I still work with him. I also work for a professional organizer, cleaning, you know, organizing people's homes. But one
right.
of the aspects we do is basements and garages. And I actually had an incident where I forgot that I had been utilizing nasal guard and got started in a basement and became very, very sorry that I didn't have it. But I found it in my car, in my purse. So I was able to go wash my face, restart the day, use my nasal guard, and it makes a humongous difference with dust and all that kind of stuff that you're unlodging in people's dirty, dusty basements.
Yeah, I mean, basements, garages,
cool,
attics, full of dust, right? Yeah.
Full of it. And I would always end the day feeling like, am I getting sick? Am I getting a cold? But it would just be the exposure. And I know for a fact that in those circumstances, nasal guard's been a really, really helpful tool for cleaning and, you know, dust removal, debris removal.
Yeah, yeah. And so how long have you been using nasal guard?
I'm guessing it's about a little over 4 years.
Wow, yeah. And you still find it really efficacious when you remember to use it.
I do. And I, like I said, I've been out and about with the public in close contact during, you know, a difficult time. And I feel like I have stayed, you know, really well. I, you know, how are you going to judge that? But
Yeah, it's very difficult to quantify that, isn't it? Very difficult to say that that was because of nasal guard. However,
that's right.
Yeah. And if you weren't wearing a mask, then it's the next best thing, isn't it? Or maybe it's even better. Who knows?
Maybe it's even better. I feel like it's better.
Yeah.
It made more sense to me. Many, many years ago, my son, who has special needs, had a very unconventional allergist immunologist who was kind of experimenting with a very similar concept for kids that were very immunocompromised. And he had us doing 25 years ago, had us doing some very similar concept things. And I thought, you know, if that same concept had come around again, you know, keeping nasal passages very clean and possibly having some type of, you know, somewhat sticky barrier. It made sense to him. It made sense to me. So it just made sense to use it.
Well, I think it does make sense to use it. And I love the fact that it's drug free as well. There's no, you know, no nasties in there. So brilliant.
That's a big deal. That's a big deal for me. I don't do well. I'm not a person who does well with pharmaceuticals, chemical exposures. I've had no problems with nasal guard. I have sensitive skin. I've had no problem with nasal guard. I thought at some points, like, I guess the question, what if it doesn't work? You know, the price point is very, very good. I feel like it was a manageable, like, I'm going to give this a try.
Yeah.
Because I'm not committing hundreds of dollars. It was very nominal and it lasts a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. So like why not give it a go, right? Yeah.
Why not?
Exactly. So many things that we're told are going to be good for us cost too much money, I think, these days.
Yeah, it happens.
Yeah, but nasal guard is definitely an exception. Well, Janet, thank you so much for telling me about your experiences with nasal guard. I'm really pleased to hear that it's helped you, and keep trying with your son. It sounds
I intend to be honest with you. I think it's a really good another tool in his toolbox to help keep him well and to help with the protecting his eyes and his nose when you don't have those first lines of defense.
I love it. Thank you so much. You know, best of luck to you both on that score.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much.
No problem.
Janet Costello there in the United States with her experiences with nasal guard. And if you want to try nasal guard for yourself, all you have to do is click on the link on the UK Health Radio homepage for worldwide delivery. And if you do try nasal guard, or if you've tried it already, I would love to hear what your experiences are with this product. I know I'll be trying it when we get into my hay fever season, not everybody's hay fever season. But if you are traveling or you are working in a dusty environment like Janet talked about, then do let us know how it works for you. You can get in touch with me directly at my email address, jj@thepracticalalchemist.uk. I would love to hear from you. And that's about all we have time for today. This show was brought to you in association with Nasal Guard, the drug-free nasal gel that uses electrostatic technology to block harmful airborne contaminants as well as indoor and outdoor allergens. So it's perfect for allergy sufferers, travellers, and anyone working in a dusty environment. If you want to find out more about me, then do check out my websites, thepracticalalchemist.uk and also safehavenhealing.uk. That's where you'll find out all about my energy clearing work. Well-being is firmly rooted in frequency. We can all raise our vibration ourselves, but sometimes we need help with clearing what's stuck. Anyway, you'll find all the links to my social media channels at my website, so you'll also find some audio tracks and videos that will help you relax and deal with any stresses in your life. Thank you for listening. Join me next time for more Practical Alchemy. Until then, it's goodbye from me and that nightingale.